Welcome to the Missing Piece Center for Anxiety. My name is Laura Rhodes Lemon.
Anxiety is a fight or flight response. And when we're in fight or flight, what our bodies are doing is shooting adrenaline and cortisol into our systems.
There's a lot of talk about using MDMA or ketamine, mushrooms even, for this kind of treatment of anxiety. Do you believe in that? Inherited anxiety. I didn't really know that was a thing. I mean, I know of anxious parents. Tell me more about that.
First of all those anxiety drugs just make anxiety worse. You get rebound anxiety. We're so hard on ourselves. Stop it. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Building an anxiety toolkit. Can you give us 3 to 5 tips on how you would do that? Anxiety triggers. Can you elaborate on some common triggers and how individuals can become more aware of them in their daily lives?
There's all these steps in my book to help you find what's draining your battery. What boundaries are you not setting? Who are you hanging out with that you don't want to be hanging out with?
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Laura Rhodes Levin is a renowned mental health professional, advocate, and the visionary founder of the Missing Piece Center for Anxiety. With a deep commitment to transforming the way we approach mental health, Laura has pioneered innovative and holistic methods for treating anxiety, depression, trauma, and stress. Through her groundbreaking center in California, she integrates traditional therapy with cutting-edge practices such as neurofeedback, biofeedback, art therapy, and mindfulness-based treatments, emphasizing the critical connection between mind and body. A passionate advocate for destigmatizing mental health, Laura's influence extends beyond the therapy room. She is a sought-after speaker, media contributor, and educator, empowering individuals and organizations to prioritize mental well-being. Known for her empathetic approach and ability to make complex mental health topics accessible, Laura has become a trusted leader in the field, helping countless individuals find balance, resilience, and peace in their lives. Please join me for an insightful conversation on what is misunderstood about anxiety with Laura Rhodes Levin. Hi, Laura. Thank you for joining me on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. You know, anxiety is such an important topic. Everybody has so many questions about it all the time. So I'm really, really glad you're here. And by the way, everybody can understand it. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone's been through it or know someone who is affected by anxiety. So it's great that you're here. I wanted to start out by letting everybody that's listening and watching know a little bit about who you are and how you got into this field.
Thank you. I am a therapist. I grew up in the entertainment business where anxiety ran very, very high. And after a heart attack and trying to balance my everything with drugs and alcohol, I found a better way and ended up running a mental health facility that focuses on anxiety, depression, and trauma, not drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And the universe just keeps pushing me to, I just am open. And then it's like, write a book. Okay. I'll write a book, open a charity. Okay. I'll open a charity. And I feel so blessed and so lucky to do what I'm doing, guide fellow anxiety sufferers out of anxiety.
Yeah. So I'm curious, is there one thing or a number of things that led you to want to write this book? The book, by the way, if people are listening, is called The Missing Piece. It's a really great book. Everybody should get it. We'll talk later in the show about where you can get it. But was there something that really triggered you wanting to write the book?
You know, I run an anxiety center, as I said. And So it's very unique. It's my patients come anywhere from 9 to 25 hours a week. Most of it is covered by insurance. And So many people over the years have said, will you open one in Florida? Will you open one in New York, Santa Barbara? And I want to practice what I preach and still enjoy my backyard.
Right.
So I thought, okay, let me get the message out and help people in a way where I can be everywhere, but also still enjoy my life at home and with my friends.
Right. Oh, wonderful. Okay. So let's talk about the book in general. You start off by talking about something I never even thought of, which is inherited anxiety. I didn't really know that was a thing. I mean, I know if people have like anxious parents, okay, maybe, but tell me more about that.
Sure. They've done a lot of studies. I think the first one was with Holocaust survivors, where we've learned that we don't just inherit our hair color and our eye color. We inherit our trauma. We inherit the emotional impressions that have been left on our DNA. And then, you know, I'm 4 years old in Tarzana, California, in a lovely little neighborhood, and I'm afraid there's a bear in the closet. Why? I had nothing to be afraid of, but it was inside me from my mother and from her mother and probably her mother before that.
Right. Interesting. So, and I'm curious, like, when do they have stats on when anxiety really shows up in people who are inheriting the anxiety, as opposed to it being brought on by some sort of trauma?
I think you could tell just with your baby. You know, your baby is very communicative before it can ever speak.
Yeah.
And there's those babies that are just chill and kind of sitting back and looking at stuff. And there's those babies that are very hypervigilant and alert and aware. And I think those are really the first signs. And trauma's a little bit more obvious.
Right.
When it starts happening.
Right. Of course. So something that a chapter that I really loved in your book, because I have a 12-year-old daughter, was talking about the anxiety that can go along with social anxiety very young with young kids. Tell me your thoughts on that. I mean, I see that every day. I sometimes get anxious watching the interaction that some kids have with each other, kids being left out, kids being bullied. You know, whether or not your kid's on one side or the other, it can give the parent anxiety. So like, can we talk about that whole subject?
Yeah, kids, they haven't fully developed, especially in elementary school, the idea that they're egocentric, not meaning about their egos, but their worlds kind of revolve around them. And they've just moved past expressing emotions because they're hungry, etc. And they're very cruel, I think, from just an insecure place at a very young age, because it's very dog eat dog out there. We have this natural desire to need to fit in. I talk about being outcast is literal. It used to mean death. If you were cast out of the cave, that means death.
Yeah.
So you really want to fit in. And instead of having the emotional tools to reach out and love each other and be inclusive, fear is what runs our behavior. And then when you get into teenagers and the hormones come flooding in, and the opposite of true is true. Now they realize, and in therapy, they call it a personal audience. Teenagers think that everybody is looking at them and judging them. And oh my God, my hat, my ear. And they become so aware of other people and how they're looking at those people and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And the insecurity just goes straight through the roof. And, you know, hormones, at no matter what age you are, can be pretty dysregulating.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because you're right. It manifests as insecurity, but it's coming from a place of being anxious, right? Or does one come before the other, actually?
I think they're sort of bedfellows. I found that the more I've learned to love myself and not judge myself, I've become so much more compassionate and open to other people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what would you say to parents that are listening that have kids going through this, young to teenagers, that they could do to help kind of remind kids about, you know, how to look at themselves, at other people, to deal with their anxiety, to deal with the insecurities?
Something I think we need to learn at a young age is that the universe creates things because they're needed. The universe is not very random in what it creates. And each person, each child that you have in your home is very special and has a very special gift to give to the world. And we spend so much of our early life dumbing ourselves down and trying desperately to fit in that we don't even really discover who we are until we're older. And I think that teaching kids how to embrace their weird, their self, their passions, whatever that is, their people will naturally find them. People resonate with each other's light, which is much more connective than when you're coming from that fearful place that people just smell and back away from.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying and I love what you're saying, but I feel like some adults aren't even at that place yet. So like how would we go about teaching younger kids or other people how to do that if we live in such a society that is so focused on social media and looking a certain way and being, you know, doing what the Joneses are doing and keeping up with all that? Like, what would your advice be?
I think we often teach what we need to learn ourselves. And so if you're feeling that pressure, most of my personal clients, I have other therapists who work with younger people. They're women in their 50s and 60s who have just put their nose to the grindstone from day one, you know, either went to school or had kids and have been trying to be forced into some box. And then they've got migraines and they've got IBS and they've got all these physical symptoms that's just their body screaming at them to say, what do you want? It's your turn. This is your chapter.
Yeah. And that's actually my next question. I was going to say, can you describe the physiological effects of anxiety on the body and how they can contribute to a person's overall health and well-being? You mentioned a couple symptoms, but what else do people, how does it manifest?
Well, if you understand anxiety, anxiety is a fight or flight response. And when we're in fight or flight, what our bodies are doing is shooting adrenaline and cortisol into our systems. And what they do is they kill your dopamine and your serotonin. Those are your feel-good neurotransmitters. So when you're anxious, you start to feel your heart racing. You feel your palms sweating. You've got that adrenaline in your tummy, which is not good for your tummy. So what it's doing is it's dumping acid into your stomach and it's tightening your vasus system, all your veins, all of your heart stuff, and tightening, you know, around your neck, your head, your temples. And so it's creating these tension headaches. The heart, I had a heart attack when I was 37 years old. Because I was just such a stress case and I just needed type A perfectionist, go, go, go. And that is not the secret to life. It's about enjoying yourself and finding what drives you in a way that, yes, you're not sitting on a couch, you're moving, but whatever you're doing is bringing you joy. It's releasing dopamine. It's releasing serotonin. Or oxytocin. A lot of times anxiety causes you to isolate. When we are hugging each other, when we're laughing, when we're with each other, that's the love neurotransmitter. Oxytocin is what happens between a mom and a baby. Oxytocin is what gets released when we eat chocolate. So anxiety takes us away from things and restricts everything, and the feel-good stuff brings us out.
How do we differentiate, though, between like what's okay, what's normal stress, and then like what's, I don't know the term, clinical stress or something that could cause a heart attack?
I think at this stage of the game, we're so used to running at these high levels with our cell phones, that unfortunately it gets to, and even the mentality of doing. When we meet someone, one of the first questions is, what do you do? When it should really be, who are you? Right?
Yeah.
And so if you find yourself, you know, forgetting a lot of things because you think your memory is bad, but you're just not present long enough to remember where you put something down.
I do that all the time.
Right? Things are falling off your plate. There's not enough time in the day to do stuff.
Right. But it's funny you say that because I think like I'm a very good juggler. I could do five things at once. Also, if I don't have things to juggle, I don't like it. I don't know what goes on with me, but I can't sit in like a quiet space. I'm not a meditator. I'm not a yoga person because I feel like I'll get Tourette's syndrome and start yelling because that's just like not my jam. But like I'm really good at driving somewhere and saying, okay, no problem, because I can get four things done as I'm driving. It's a wonder I haven't been in a car accident, you know, because you're doing so many things and on the phone and talking and, you know, you're right. I'm not present enough. And I've thought to myself, oh my God, I wonder if I'm getting early signs of dementia or something, because I'll be like, did I have that conversation? Did I take that, you know, vitamin that I was supposed to? And I really can't remember. And it is because I'm all over the place and I hate it. Well, I do hate it.
We value the busyness. I'll tell you an aha moment I had. I was in my garage and I caught myself putting on my seatbelt, opening the garage, putting on my sunglasses and hitting reverse all at the same exact time. And I could feel the chaos of it. And I was like, what did you just say? 30 seconds? Like what was that about?
Right.
And so I find that I just feel better in my body when I'm just doing things that I found that like, admittedly, I like to be doing things, but I've learned to do things like, you know, make a necklace or do a painting or read a book, doing things that allow my body to calm down while my mind is still. Those are forms of meditation, in my opinion.
I need to have them on a to-do list to feel like I'm doing it and crossing it off. But you're right. It is a nice feeling when you can sit and be still in the moment with something that you're focusing on, one thing.
Yeah. And that's what meditation really is the ability to get out of the noise of your brain and focus in on something that brings you peace in the moment. And I speak to so many clients of like, what are you going to do this afternoon? Well, I'm going to do this, this, and that. I mean, what would you like to do? I'd really love to sit and read a book, but I feel guilty. Why? At the end of the day, is that grocery trip or dry cleaning trip going to make your life any richer? Or is reading a book and going on adventures or just creating in your own special way? If you look at the form of the word recreation, it means recreate. We need time to recreate ourselves every day to fill those tanks back up so that when we really do have to go, it's easy. We're not falling into bed at night and going, I can't believe my life. I'm so tired. You know, that's not ideal.
So I want to talk about anxiety and managing your stress. I mean, because obviously a lot of people have anxiety. Everybody manages it in a different way. Like you said, from drinking or doing drugs. Some people, you know, go on hikes. Some people do meditate. So what are some ways that are the best way to handle anxiety that you can really see tangible results?
Gosh, there are just so many. I think what I want people to learn about anxiety is that it's just one part of your brain that's doing that. And it's usually anticipating and worrying about things that are nowhere in the room with you. Mm-hmm. And I think we've really misused the term mindfulness, and we don't know what that really means. We really, really don't. And I know for me, whether you're drinking or running, you know, jogging, what's happening is you're not escaping. You're being in the moment. Mm-hmm. When a person's drunk, they're like, oh, this music is great. I love you, man. They're not thinking about their problems. When you go to Hawaii, your senses take over and you don't care about your taxes in Hawaii. You're just, you can feel, you can smell, you can touch. And so that's really your first steps out of anxiety is come to your senses, literally, using your senses to be present in the moment, and shut up that brain that wants to be really your enemy. It's about making your brain your friend.
There is a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5 where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. And the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. That's peacecorps.gov/serve. What are your thoughts on getting to the root of why you're anxious? Because I know a lot of people medicate. I'm not even talking with drugs and alcohol. I'm talking about actual anxiety medicine. And they live with this, you know, but I don't know that they're ever addressing the root cause, which will just, you know, make them be on these drugs forever and they'll continue to have the symptoms of anxiety. So how important is getting to the root of the problem?
It's so important. First of all those anxiety drugs just make anxiety worse. You get rebound anxiety, they're benzodiazepines, and they create a need for themselves. Mm-hmm. And really the root of getting out of the anxiety is, I feel like your anxiety is screaming at you to ground you and bring you to what you want. So there's all these steps in my book to help you find what's draining your battery that you don't want draining your battery. Mm-hmm. What boundaries are you not setting? Who are you hanging out with that you don't want to be hanging out with? What is it in your life that you're doing because you have to, rather than what you should?
Right.
Rather than what you want, rather. And yeah. I feel that a lot of us put a lot on ourselves that nobody else really cares about, but we think they care about it.
Right. For me, something that I found is that it's so important to clean house. You mentioned be around the right people, but sometimes that can cause anxiety too, because to sort of break up with a friend or a boyfriend or have to admit that something, you know, a relationship is toxic or you're not getting anything from it. It's really hard to cut that person out of your life, and it almost becomes a dramatic thing to do it. And I found that sometimes that can cause anxiety, even just trying to cut the anxiety out of my life.
Absolutely. It goes back to what you were saying earlier, which was so important, is that social anxiety that begins in school. And why aren't they teaching us how to have healthy interpersonal relationships from a young age instead of people pleasing and berating? Mm-hmm. And I agree, cutting those people out of your life can feel very hard. But how long is that hard going to last, as opposed to 20 more years with this person? And so worried about the harm we're going to cause someone else. And we neglect ourselves in the process.
Yeah.
So my idea in the book is learning your own user manual, knowing when a car light goes off in your body, you know what that means. Is this a big deal? Is it a little deal? And learning how to navigate relationships in a healthy way. And we, like you said, grown women, grown men, we don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think by learning yourself is the best way to teach your kids. And mm-hmm. I hope that idea of the whole body, again, another word that's really misunderstood, is holistic. Right. If your dog is stressed out, you don't say, "What triggered you, Fluffy?" You calm your animal down, right?
Yeah.
So when we're anxious, we need to know how to calm ourselves down first. Mm.
Aging is a fact of life, but let's be honest, who says we can't age better? It's time to take control of your well-being with Renew Youth. I've been so impressed by their personalized approach to health and longevity. They're not just about fixing one issue, they're about truly improving the way you feel every day. Renew Youth has been a trusted leader in hormone therapy and longevity medicine for over 25 years. What makes them stand out is their commitment to you. There's no one-size-fits-all here. They offer personalized treatments designed specifically for your needs, whether you're looking into testosterone replacement and estrogen control, for men or hormone balancing for women with estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone therapies. But it doesn't stop there. Renew Youth goes beyond hormone therapy. They also provide solutions for healthy aging, improving sexual function, weight loss, nutrition, and more. And the best part, all their treatments are physician supervised, so you know they're safe and effective. To top it off, Renew Youth is dedicated to building long-term relationships. Fun fact, their very first client from 1999 is still with them today. That's how much people trust them. Ready to find your own personalized solution to aging better? Here's an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Right now, you can save 50% on your initial lab testing, but you'll need to act fast because this is only available at my special URL, renewyouth.com/misunderstood. Take the first step to a better you and sign up for a free consultation today. That's renewyouth.com/misunderstood and start feeling your best. Support Renew Youth means supporting this podcast. I'm so excited for you to see what they can do for you. Let's age better together. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Wow, that's really interesting. So what are some suggestions? Because my next thing I wanted to talk to you about was panic attacks. So those are so confusing to me because, first of all, they're physical. I've had panic attacks before, and I don't know that they're a panic attack. I think I'm sick. I think, you know, I don't really know what's happening. I've woken up before where I was completely dizzy. To this day, I'm not sure that it was a panic attack, but my doctor said that's what it was. And I was like, but what am I anxious about that I'm waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning? I can't think of why that would happen to me. So how realistic is that, that something like that is a panic attack? And why does that come out of nowhere if we're not even thinking of the thing that we're anxious about?
Well, a lot of people wake up anxious. And what they don't teach us is that the last couple of hours of sleep, we're processing our stressors. And some of us remember our dreams, some of us don't, but a lot of yogis or meditators, they'll get up at 4 or 5 in the morning to avoid that cycle of sleep. I personally think it must be an important part of our processing. So, you know, I'll get a full night's sleep, but when I wake up with those feelings of anxiety, I have to tell myself, you were just processing something. You're okay right now. Maybe just go outside, take a deep breath, have a cup of tea. Sounds so corny to say, but starting off your day with a gratitude list, it you can roll your eyes, but when you actually think about things that you're really happy for, you start releasing those dopamine and serotonin neurotransmitters in your body, and they combat that anxiety, adrenaline stuff you just woke up with. A lot of my patients,
go ahead.
You know, the classic panic attack is this feeling like you're going to pass out, like you have to run out of a room and get somewhere. What I tell people is make sure you're laying down or sitting down, because the worst thing that's going to happen with a panic attack is you're going to faint. And when you faint, you're going to wake up completely restarted. Your body is fine. But you want to be someplace where you're laying down. And most people who've had panic attacks have had them so many times. And understanding it's going to pass. Right. It's going to be okay. If we as women didn't know what our periods were, and we just bled every month and hated people, we would think we were dying. Right. Every month, you would literally think you're dying. But I think it's so important to understand your anxiety, because then you know your period, it's the gift of life. And when you understand your anxiety, it doesn't have to be so scary.
Right, right. And it's kind of like goes back to what you're saying, though, to not fall into the cycle of like, oh, this happened, let me go get medicated in however I kind of medicate this. It's more to like calm yourself, you know, make yourself feel better. And once you've done that, try to figure out what triggered that, and what the root of that is.
Yeah, and we've all heard pause, count to 10 before you react. Personally, I think 10 seconds is a laugh. I like 24 hours before I'm ready to respond to something that's really upset me. But what happens is our brains just get into a habit of the rabbit hole. And it really is a matter of practice of going, okay, stop, just stop, sit down. You're not going to solve this right now. Breathe, put on some music, smell something good, like literally calm yourself down. So, and that takes practice, just giving yourself permission to stop and not needing to fix the problem, is very hard to get in the habit of, and it's vital to real problem solving.
Right.
Sorry, you, I get hot flashes, so forgive my friend.
No, that's okay. I'm starting to get those too. I get it. Okay, in your book, you mentioned the concept of anxiety triggers. Can you elaborate on some common triggers and how individuals can become more aware of them in their daily lives?
Oh gosh, they're different for everyone. Sunday night can be an anxiety trigger because Monday is going to start your week. And quite often the week isn't even a bad thing. It's just the idea that we have to wind back up again. Leaving the house to go do something and making sure you've got everything you need to leave the house can be a trigger. Financial issues can be a trigger. Emotional strife that you have with people, with parents, with kids, with best friends, with spouses. Traffic can be a trigger. Crowds can be a trigger. Really, a peach can be a trigger. It all depends on what you're programmed for and what your brain has learned to be afraid of or anticipatory about. I feel like anxiety is just like this waiting room that you're stuck in until you just move forward into whatever it is, and then you're okay.
Right.
And it's 10 miles wide and it's 10 miles high, but it is paper thin. The minute you walk through it, you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. In your experience, how does anxiety manifest differently in children and adults? And how can you work around that?
Oh, gosh. In children, I think anxiety can be shown. I find anxiety gets shown in the black and white. And I wish that the gray had a prettier connotation to it.
Yeah.
So if you've got someone who's really withdrawn and quiet, and if you've got someone who's just having outright tantrums, those are both signs of anxiety.
Wait, and I want to stop you there because I think that's really important. I think there's a misconception where people think anxiety presents itself as like chaos. And there are people that go in and withdraw. And by the way, this creates, you know, this is why people commit suicide, because they are completely within their own self, you know? So I think it's important to know how it manifests for sure.
Yeah, a lot of my clients or people that I just know with deep anxiety, they turn out the lights and they crawl under the covers and they're just not ready to face the world. And COVID was such a big manifester of that because everyone was just so shut in.
Yeah.
And it left us in our own heads. So, and I think it doesn't present that much differently in adults. Adults are running in chaos and they just don't have time to take care of themselves. Or they are just completely antisocial and shut in.
Yeah. Okay, so your book I thought was amazing. I'm not all the way through it, but I really do think it's great. What do you hope readers take away from reading the book in general?
So the original title for my book was Harness Your Fears and Freaking Fly Already. I think we're so programmed to detect what can be wrong, what could go wrong. And I really think the ultimate goal for every single human being on earth is to enjoy our lives. And that looks different for everybody. Some people love growing things. I'm not talking about just being out there surfing. We all have these passions. And I think we should all enjoy our lives. And if we were all happy, it would be a lovely place to live.
Yeah.
But we're so focused on what we're afraid of. And that's the goal, is don't be afraid, get excited, and go find what pleases you. Mm. And that looks different to everybody. And that's the key.
Yeah. You talk in your book about building an anxiety toolkit. Is that what you call it? Can you give us like 3 to 5 tips on how you would do that?
Well, just based on the topics we talked about, generational is a great place to start. What anxieties are you carrying that aren't even yours? Are they inherited? I think we get a lot of anxiety. I know I had a heart attack because I grew up in the entertainment industry. I was told that was what I was meant to do. Mm-hmm. And I was following a rubric for someone else's life. And if you'd asked me then if I wanted to be a therapist and run a mental health charity, I would have said, you're drunker than I am. I'd rather kill myself than do that. But it was only through just kind of self-discovery that I found out what I really like. So we make a lot of choices that aren't ours. So find out what choices are forming your life that are yours and that are someone else's. And seeing yourself through your own eyes rather than how you think other people see you. Because we really don't know how other people see us, and we always think it's critical. And so being compassionate with yourself. We're human. We're going to make mistakes. I don't even think there's such a thing as failure. I think if we're just always learning and going, oh, well, that didn't work. Well, but maybe I'll try this. We're so hard on ourselves. Stop it. Don't be so hard on yourself. Be nice to yourself.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because failing obviously sucks, but you know, you could really, if you take the lesson from failing, it actually is not a failure because you learn what not to do next time, or you learn who not to trust or how to do something differently. And, you know, I think it's so important to, you know, have that pendulum of, you know, being in the negative or being, you know, in the things that don't succeed, because that's the only way you can succeed. You can't do it right every time.
Yeah, it's blueprints for the future. I used to say, you may have this idea, putting a window in your floor. Wouldn't that be cool? You can see the roots of the house, and you walk to the kitchen in the middle of the night and you step through the glass and you break your ankle, and everyone's like, what an idiot, who puts a window in the floor? But eventually you get to plexiglass, and it's a great idea, right. But it needs to be workshopped, and it's different, and why not?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a good way to look at it. So you have something called the Few Foundation, PHEW. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, so tell me what it is.
So the Few Foundation is short for Pathways for Health and Emotional Wellness. What I do is not cheap. It takes a lot to treat people in the way that my center does, which includes music therapy and massage and neurofeedback and talk therapy and just aromatherapy, just everything. And what I found is a lot of people can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And I hate turning them away. And then even worse are the people whose insurance do pay for it. But then after 3 months, you're done. They're like, well, you've had 30 days to fix yourself. It's been, you know, in 50 years, you need more than 30 days.
Yeah.
And so then the charity can pick up where the insurance companies left off. And we're a pretty new charity. We had a client who his insurance cut him off, and he just decided he wanted to pay it forward. And he did this big fundraiser. He raised $75,000, and it sort of pushed me into becoming a nonprofit. And I know it's supposed to be there. So I'm really trying hard to get it off the ground and create a place where people can get real holistic help and not go broke doing it.
Right. And you mentioned that you need the foundation to sometimes help fund your center. That's the Missing Piece Center, correct?
Right. And it doesn't fund the center. The center, thank God, it's self-supporting. It's profitable. It's great. It just helps people who can't actually attend the center.
Got it. Okay. And tell me some of the things that you guys are known for in your center.
We are known for a lot of places around the country are dual diagnosis. So they treat drug addiction and mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard for people with mental health issues to just and high anxiety to sit and talk about 12-step stuff. I'm a big 12-stepper. I love being sober, but I don't do that work in the center. People who've had sexual abuse and emotional abuse and serious depression and isolation, they need to meet with other people and learn how to calm themselves down and relax. And all the tools that I take and use can be used at home. That's what I want people to do. I want people to know and learn different ways to calm themselves down and get turned on by life and deal with their problems.
No, I was just going to say, and some of those things are all different aspects, like therapy or aromatherapy. I don't know if you do sound bath stuff, but yeah. I know people love that.
We do music, you know, get that anxiety into a drum. You don't have to be a musician. We work on nutrition, because what you're feeling is what you're going to put on your plate. Neurofeedback and PEMF are things that are used by the armed forces for trauma. Neurofeedback is the number one recommended treatment for ADD and ADHD mm-hmm. by the American Pediatric Academy.
Explain what that is in detail for people that don't know.
In a nutshell, it's an electroencephalogram. It's an EEG where mm-hmm. your brain looks at itself and is like, oh my God, it's terrifying out there. And then it looks around and it's like, but I'm in a room in a comfortable what? And it starts to correct itself.
Oh, wow.
Your brain has the ability to correct itself from overwhelmed trauma, but it needs the tools to do that. And neurofeedback does that.
What are your thoughts on people who use, there's a lot of talk about using MDMA or ketamine, mushrooms even, for this kind of treatment of anxiety? Do you believe in that?
I'm so torn on that. I mean, I had one of the greatest epiphanies in my life on ecstasy in Disneyland, but
But that wasn't a guided tour by a professional.
Right. I don't think it's regulated enough. Again, I feel like it really can be a very profound shortcut if done properly, mm-hmm. but I don't think we have the experience with that yet, really. And when it comes down to it, you can't fail just getting down to your own personal grassroots issues, digging in and learning what helps you. You don't have to have a totally psychedelic experience to deal with your problems. And there's no downfall in just facing it head on and learning your user manual.
Right. Where is the Missing Piece Center located?
We are in Agoura Hills, which is just outside of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. And do people have to be present there to do it, or do you do over Zoom?
Yeah, no, we don't do telehealth. There's just too much to the energy work. I mean, we do Reiki, we do him. You got to be in person. You have to feel people.
But can you come and check in for 2 weeks, a week, a month? How does that work?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of people who come in from all over the country, and they can stay at either houses that, you know, Airbnb or places that house people who are going to different facilities, not mm-hmm. like Crazy Place, but and a lot of, we have a Hampton Inn straight down the street from us.
Okay.
And some extended stays. So a lot of people like to come and stay and get a master's degree in themselves.
Oh, wow. And so how long are people mostly staying there for?
You know, most people want to stay for about a year. I know that sounds like a lot. And when you first tell people 3 hours a day, 3 days a week, they're like, oh, no. People don't want to leave. They don't. I'm so blessed, but people don't want to leave. But I think it takes about a year to really rewrite your book. Now, it's not to say that people don't leave sooner than that.
Do people check in? I mean, I don't think a lot of people have the opportunity to just leave their life for a year. So do people check in for 2 weeks, go home and practice it, come back for another 2 weeks? Like, What's the standard for people?
I think when people are really suffering, it's about 3 months if you're coming in from out of town.
Yeah.
Usually people stay about 3 months.
And do they have to completely turn off the rest of their life? Like, could they work remote from there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we work with lawyers, we work with teachers, accountants, law professors. People have to, support themselves and live their lives. And luckily, we can do so much remotely now.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds amazing. I wish I had a year to come and hang out with you in Agora Health.
You can try a month, but you'll want more.
Yeah, no, I get it. All right, tell people where they can find more information about the Missing Piece Center and the Few Foundation.
Okay, so if they look up the Missing Piece, PEACE, like peace of mind, on the internet, or Laura Rhodes Levin, you'll come to the center. The Few Foundation is on the center. If you do want to order the book, you can't put the missing piece into Amazon because it changes it to PIECE, which is a Shel Silverstein book. So put my name in, Laura Rhodes Levin, and then you will get my book on Amazon and
amazing.
My CD for meditation.
Everybody should get it. It's called The Missing Piece, Rewire Your Brain, Reduce Anxiety, and Recreate Your Life. Laura, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Rachel. This is awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.